Hello, I'm Michaela Maguire, Artistic Director of Melbourne Writers Festival. You're listening to a conversation from our 2021 podcast series, which is supported by the Copyright Agency's Cultural Fund.
Hi, welcome everyone. Before we start, I'm just going to acknowledge that I am here on beautiful Wurundjeri country and pay my respects to elders past and present and extend those respects to any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people joining us this evening. My name is Bridget Caldwell-Bright. I am a Jingli Mudbura woman, so paying my respects to my country and people also. I'm an editor based in NAR, Melbourne, but I currently work at the ABC as an editorial policies advisor. So thanks everyone for joining tonight. I'm really excited that this year I was lucky enough to be one of the Melbourne Writers Festival guest curators, and you know, even though we can't do this in person, I'm still really glad that this event can go ahead in some capacity at least. So welcome to our First Nations poetry event. So we have an incredible lineup tonight of poets who are going to perform works that speak to this year's festival theme, which is Tell Me How It Ends. So celebrating country and cultural resistance and considering what comes next. I'll just start off by saying, you know, as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, we are no strangers to living in unprecedented times. You know, over 230 years, we went from having sovereignty and control over these lands to now being only 3% of the population. So we already kind of are in these end times, which is frightening. If you look at languages alone, from the hundreds that were spoken by mob to now, a majority of those being lost, we don't really have to imagine an apocalypse. We have already survived one and are living already in a dystopia. So I'm really excited by who I'm joined by tonight. So I'm going to introduce our three guests. So first we have Jazz Money, who is a Wurundjeri poet currently based on Gadigal land. Her award-winning poetry has been widely published nationally and internationally and reimagined as murals, installation, digital interventions and film. Jazz's debut collection, How to Make a Basket, is available, says September 2021, but it's available now with University of Queensland Press. Maya Hodge is a poet, curator and artist based on the lands of the Kulin Nation. Her poetry has been published by the Emerging Writers Festival, Black Wattle, Fordyke Poetry Review and Overland. Maya is a co-winner of the Mildura Writers Festival Pen Mildura Indigenous Writers Award. And Evelyn Araluen is a poet, researcher and co-editor of Overland Literary Journal. Born and raised on Darug country, she is a descendant of the Bundjalung Nation. And I will quickly add in there that she is also now the winner of the Melbourne Prize Professional Development Award as of 5 minutes ago. So just big shout out and congrats to her for that. So how we're going to run the session, I think we'll give our guests time to speak to the theme and to read some of their work. I will selfishly have a chat with them afterwards. And then if we have time, probably the last 10 or 15 minutes, we may throw to questions, just pending how we go for time. But throughout the session, there is a Q&A function, but feel free to pop your questions in there and I can proof them before we finish the session. So with that, let's get started. And I'm going to invite Jazz to begin with her piece. So thanks, Jazz.
Kira Dumarang Ninduga. I'm so happy to be here with everyone. And I'm here on beautiful Arakwal country, on the Bundjalung Nation. And it's so beautiful to be in this place, which has been cared for by custodians here since the first sunrise, away from my own Wurundjeri homeland. So just grateful to all you mob for this event and for all the beautiful nations that we're all calling in from. And I'm sorry, I've like been distracted, bloody just Googling Evelyn's win just then. So I'm like closing down all my tabs from from reading that. So yeah, this theme I really resonated with. I, like you said, Bridge, just or Blackfellas, I think, have a relationship to this concept, but also like the way that time is not a linear thing and the way that we're existing in so many times simultaneously. So it's a really like, yeah, it's a really rich thing to respond to. I'm going to read a poem called Billa, A River Cycle. It's a little bit long, so I think I'll just read the one poem. Billa is the Wiradjuri word for river, and Billabong is our word, which has been anglicised into Billabong, which I think most people know as like a pool of water. And it means that in Wiradjuri as well, Billabong, but it also means the galaxy, the Milky Way, the night sky, the universe. Like it means everything. And I love our languages. I love our like First Nations languages in that way that they can hold so much poetry so simply. And we spend all this time in these shitty English translations trying to retrofit what our languages do so brilliantly and effortlessly. So I guess that's just kind of a little bit of context to know about this poem, which I wrote last year during one of many times where I couldn't go to my home country and was just thinking about the rivers and missing it there. So, yeah, I'll read it now. What became of the river who rose up and called themselves human? Stepped upon the land containing the memories of snow melt and wellspring, smooth worn stones along their ribs, and with water curiosity, sought to know more about the humans on the land whose invasion of the waters choked the river. Billa never sleeps, for forwards, for foreverness, for flow and gift and on, and yet had become stagnant with cruel touch, a non-touch, and toxic intervention. Dams rose when you humans demand, and irrigation sucks dry to nourish not the plants of this land, but those with poisonous intent. Yes, the pesticides and all those carried in canola yellow plastics in turn run this and that towards sweet water, and so Billa is transformed to the one you see today. Hila lukla, to water not clear with flow and laughing bodies, small mouths and delicate fronds, but a sludge of gasping fish, carp, muck, cow shit, don't drink from here, no more, no good. And when rain returns, a moving sick comes across the land. But a river is always a river, eh? Even when submerged, even dispelled, even poisoned or dammed, because spirits walk this land and ancestors place Billa just so, with cause, of course. Nyaradan watched, Bilbi and Giralang and Bingu watched. Even Bunyipwawi had not seen rivers walk upon 2 feet in this world. And so, not dripping as the fish that leaps, but as a mist will rise from a dry river, so the mist turned solid rain. So Billa became a human. Skin shimmering, a cool green flesh, walks tumble glide over rocks or else some misted enormity. Fish swim under skin, danger a flash of scale, along veins, wrist and throat, yabby out of sight, under a lover can see and still mourning, light, tails, fins, scales, dawn moon reflected in muck around, dropped branches collecting, decaying, damp cool flesh with the grey mud smell. All folk love rivers, despite their erstwhile intentions. Following in their Mazdas, Nikes, Adidas, they follow where Billa moves. And Billa moves now towards the sea. A cut stream known by banks winding, slow river ways and fast river ways, until under streets submerged, a wide swamp of suburban delta. And the city appears upon aquifer disturbed, water under concrete through pipe and channel and drain, redirected, rerouted, and dispelled. Yet, Billa continues. And so, what becomes of the river who flows out to sea? What became of the people of the land? And what became of the river who rose up and called themselves human? A river is delight to behold, all smooth and welcome with the flow of places beyond horizon. And so too, Billa was in the form of one climbing out of the beds and cars of men, women and all, trying to find people soft, trying to remember them as when they leapt joy and free into cool depths, splash of hot day, river sweet, saw the drops suspended in yellow light of blurred dream vision. A river could learn it all, and still must flow on and on to new mists. And like the delta where all is fertility and possibility, Billa seeks the mangrove to clear the silt cycle, to move towards the sea, to dive into a world known as kin, but always one hard to hold, to flow out and out, to be reimagined as rain, and rejoin the lands of all rivers, of all stars, welcomed again into Billabong. Thank you.
Mandahulu. Thank you. Thanks so much. That was so beautiful. And, you know, I really love that the river must flow on, and it's just so resonates so much with, you know, me and I guess a lot of us over the last couple of years that, you know, no matter what, we just keep flowing on. And I really love that theme, and I wonder if it will come up again tonight, this theme of water. You know, when we talk about the end or we talk about apocalyptic times, like, it always comes back to water, I feel, you know, because that is kind of the beginning of life for us. And, you know, when we're talking about that at the moment, I'm really reminded of how, you know, my country, Mudbury country, is about to be opened up. The Beetaloo Basin about to be opened up to shale gas fracking. And, you know, these are decisions being made while we have people representing our country in Glasgow and making these really, you know, these claims of net zero by 2050. And, you know, back home, that's sort of what's happening, and that it really hits hard. And so when we talk about apocalyptic times and living through this, yeah, it really, really hurts, I feel. So thank you so much. I really appreciate that, you sharing that. Maya, did you want to go next?
Yeah, thank you, Jazz. That was really beautiful, really transported me away from the city. Although I do live right next to the Maribyrnong, so that connection with water is so special. So thank you. Hi, I'm Maya. I'm a proud Laotian and young car woman, and I'm coming from Wurundjeri country to you now. And I'm so thankful for these lands and for the elders of this country and the people of this country and this land that holds and protects me. So thank you. I think my poem is going to be a little different in that that beautiful winding healing energy. I think I'm going to use it in a way where I responded to the theme, it holds a bit more anger. And recently I've been really interested in the way that we, as Aboriginal women, people don't like it when we get angry. And they don't like it when we speak our minds because, you know, people get afraid of what we have to say. We've took too much power, too much power in our bodies. So this is a response to the theme. And I think with anger comes healing, and I think it's important to have spaces to be angry in order to heal. So this is my poem. Come, sit at my table, my scuffed and stained childhood kitchen table. Come sit at my table, and I'll tell you about how white fellas look at my proud black brother with hard eyes and curled lips. The way people pat my mum's head and put me in a little box. And our neighbours who let slurs unleash from their mouths and all I hear are muted sounds and the ringing in my ears and the red hot humiliation streaks across my face. It's hard not to be pessimistic in a time of great unrest. Like cutting a hydra's head, a new head will grow in a sea of contempt. And the growing swell of white supremacy. But I think the pain can be overrun with the joy of my community. In the activists and artists who sow thread for our teas and grow seeds that grow trees, our continued fight lies in our old people's memories. In the academics who battle with pen and the dancers who slow down time and beat with their black feet onto sleeping country. The athletes who twist contorted bodies through air, who walk off the field hearing the echoes of hate, clambering over football fences of generational racism, only held back by a flimsy gate. Come, sit at my table. We are still marching for our rightful sovereignty, still attending hearings of family members who have long been taken from us into the dreaming, and I'm still dreaming of a time where museums don't hold our cultural belongings. What would they be if they didn't have my people's Nyungnyu measured sticks behind a cold glass? And I know that donation was in fact not theirs to decide. Their institutions would be laid bare. Our ancestors would be laid to rest. Our young people wouldn't be put to the test in places of knowledge that thrive off slideshows of our people in chains. I'm still sending emails about cultural sensitivity and the endless turmoil of pain. Come, sit at my table. We are still being asked how to fix this muddled mess when we've already expressed through countless drifting words across many generations how this could end. Uncle sings the stolen children's pain into the wind. Auntie stands in parliament with her fist raised high. Murals plaster walls with this place's true history. We scream it on Swanston Street during NAIDOC week as we march the same path from years ago. I don't want to be grateful for a seat at the table. I just want to sit at my mother's table. Come, sit at my table. Listen and weave it slowly into the ears of those willing, like my granny weaved language through wisps of time to me. I try and speak the words, and they tumble and fumble from my dormant tongue. I weep for songs and dances laying unsung in my churning belly and polluted lungs. I don't know what lays on the horizon of the empire's ruins, but perhaps my grandchildren's children will watch the foundations of genocide slowly crumble as they walk the long way home, back to the sea salt lands they'll return. We can all try to overrun the bad with the resilience and love and anger of our community. My Tamaldama, countrymen. But we can never truly see things change without love and care for country and its people, without respect for our waterways and our children, without true justice for those murdered and taken. You need us as the world warms, because without ancestral knowledge to tick back time, to set fires alight, new shoots will sprout. You need us. Without us, things won't begin to end. But we need one thing that our souls cry for and lack, and that will always be land back. Come, sit at our table. Thank you.
Wow, May, thank you so much. That was beautiful. And I really love that you spoke to this, to anger and that feeling of anger. And it's, I guess, the same as what Jazz was saying about time not being linear for us, and nor is healing, and anger is a really big part of that. And so when you speak, you know, those words, and you can, I can feel the passion and the anger and the heart that you have in that, I think that is really something that deserves respect. And I thank you for sharing.
Thank you. And I hope everyone's doing okay at home. I should have said it. It does hold a bit of trauma, that one. So sending love to everyone.
Thanks, Mia. Evelyn, would you like to go next?
Yeah. I just want to start off by acknowledging that I'm speaking today on the lands of the Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nations, and I want to pay my honour and my respect to their custodianship of this country since time immemorial, and that continues to look after this place. I'm very honoured to be a guest here, and it's a deep privilege to be able to speak here while a guest on this land. I also just want to say, what a beautiful collection of voices to be surrounded by for this event. So big thank you to Bridget and to Melbourne Writers Festival for putting this together, because it's amazing. It's always beautiful to hear Jazz's work, and I've, you know, recently finished this gorgeous book, and it's beautiful and stunning. So it's beautiful to you know, hear you read from that. But also, Maya, you know, I've been wanting to hear you read for a while, and it was a million times more extraordinary than I'd ever expected. So, you know, you're such an incredible talent. Oh my God. So lots of pressure following you, Maya. Kind of keeping up the themes that Maya and Jazz have brought into this, I want to read a poem called The Inland Sea. And it's a poem about country, not specifically my country, but about dispossessed Aboriginal land. And also it responds to the different ways in which it has been written, and which that writing of country has been taken from our own voices and from our own power, and has been made a tool of settler colonialism. So this is thinking particularly about a novel that was published not that long ago of the same title, and the way in which it erases Aboriginal presence while claiming to speak for the loss and harm of many of our relations, our animal and non-human living relations through country. So, yeah, this poem is called The Inland Sea. When we laughed the sea from the belly, the country opened up to drink. Nothing is forgotten from earth, just moves in muscle memory. What doesn't echo is recalled by the first bird to rustle free from the dust. Here is where we met the stars. Here is where we sung their shadows through soil. We earned back the water and bathe in it under the eye of that which carved it through the earth. Nothing like a river could be just for the name. Nothing like a sea could leave us without us knowing why. So turn your gaze then. Take the map from the wall and the ash from the archive. From your mouth spit the pages you mistook for law, and see if they can cartograph a ghost. This vision is the cleanest bloodshed imagined, staining and spilling stretched through bush and book alight. A country only named as nation, a stage, a scene, a street to stumble through, breathless, melancholy, vast and vapid, pressed down by heat and light and all else left to sight. The glistened decay that withers, fragile, delicate, collapsing into the handsome arms of history. Curled by invasive species, it is windswept and crumbling to the sea. It stands at the bow as the white sails flee and burns up at the slightest song of sun. How many rivers sail till the story can be settled sufficient? How many churches carried up the creek? How much glass for that little dark light? How many ships dragged to the desert? How much sandstone has been reaped for the dust? They're dragging black bodies through the halls, shooting black bodies on the street, blood on the concrete, the wattle, the sheets. Enough and plenty, enough and plenty. In the fresh and the salt, it spreads, it spills out from the belly of the greed that took it from here. Enough to fill mouths and cups and tubs where black bodies can splash in suds, can shimmer up the shore, can swim and drink the sun. More of that than white sails splitting sea, more of the muscle than the memory, more of the every before this unending time. The river is dry but not empty. The river knows how when what now blinks in the sky carved it to the earth. Imagine imagining this hollow. What did your ruin want with us anyway? Sydney is soft and humid and dying, your ghosts lingering and unsettling ash as they trace too close to the fire's edge. Your God was dead before the nails, and the cross was bored of waiting for a word. And what for? He's tired, and we're tired, and the windowsills are tired. And what do rocks wait for but sun? Your ruined Eden, your golden hair in curl and conquest, left in the bed, the bush, the inland sea, the sunburnt country. The prophecy was pretty, but never yours to wear. The white sails split the sea slower than the song sent for warning, slower than the river carver carried it through coast, through water that would wash the salted linen, soil-stained and blood-drained, bleached and burnt and flooded by every half-caste dream, every gift from yours to ours, the bush and book alight. What more could it want but our empty? What more than a howled horror in echo through the cityscape, the ring, the shine, the heaving word first sung to sails? What more than dancing the ocean out of you? What more than giving sea back to the wreck? What more than sinking ships? The waves still break on the shore. The bodies still break on the floor. Thank you. Very naughty dog. Very naughty dog.
I've been waiting to hear you read that. And it's like, because I read your book and I read it in your voice and I read it how I think you would, but it like couldn't even compare to how, and also your dog added much.
Oh, there's two dogs, unfortunately. That's why they're barking. Normally it's pretty chill. Two dogs. Yeah, no, had to add that in as an annotation to the book. Imagine this with two dogs barking at each other.
thank you so much. I was given the privilege by Melbourne Writers Fest to curate these events, right, I have this real bias in doing so in that, you know, I could program an event that I knew was going to, it was like I knew that I would enjoy, first of all. But, I mean, I feel like there's so much love, and even though we're not in the same room, but, like, in this room right now, there is just so much, like, love, and I just feel like that's something that's been so missing the last 2 years. You know, we're all so disconnected, and I think that I really underestimated how powerful an event like this can be. So, again, like, I just really want to say that I'm so thankful for you three to, you know, being here tonight. And I just feel like, you know, it's like this kind of renewal I haven't felt in a long time. And I think that's something that's been really missing the last couple of years, from my life at least. I just wanted to say that. And thank you all for reading and sharing your words and thoughts. Takes a lot of courage. I guess on that, maybe is there anything, you know, that you want to speak, any of you want to speak to about how you have kind of, you know, I don't want to keep talking about unprecedented times and like COVID years, but I guess it has had such an effect. And I remember speaking to my mum about this last year, and she said that, you know, it's really disturbed our natural, like, or an organic, like, walkabout rhythm, that she couldn't, like, go back home, or she couldn't, like, return to country like she usually would. And, you know, I've had a son recently, and I haven't been able to take him back yet, and that's had, like, a really big effect on me. So I guess I just wanted to see how you were all doing, whether or not there are things that you have done in the last couple of years that have kind of helped alleviate that, you know, I guess, disconnection. Or how you've kind of coped, I guess. Jazz, you're on, you know, you're away from where you usually reside anyway. So let's start with you. Because I feel like you're the most rejuvenated at the moment because you're, you know, on the beautiful country and out of the city.
Yeah. I love Gadigal country, which is where I live. But being there throughout the last lockdown, it is not my home country, but it's so easy to get lost in the concrete and feel disconnected. I'm personally so grateful for the birds that I can see out my window that remind me to like focus on beyond. In Sydney's inner west, it's very hard to find a horizon. So I like rely a lot on those guests and visitors and those like fellas whose home is the city, but also elsewhere, who can like fly by and give me a nod on all the things that I'm feeling disconnected from. But I guess that poem that I just read before about the river really came from a place of like longing throughout COVID. Like Wiradjuri, our name means people of the three rivers. And I was just like, there's so much suffering that a pandemic blinds out in other ways, right? Like you're focusing on this one moment in time where there is so much horror that is a consequence of the pandemic, but it disguises so much other stuff that's going on. And like, we know this as First Nations people, that when people are so easily distracted from what is happening on country, what is happening to our peoples, that, you know, the selfishness, I think, that kind of is induced by a pandemic really brings out some really bad traits in people. And so I was really like missing my homelands, but also thinking about like, what would they say if like, if we lived in a society that was better at listening to beyond, you know, these white concerns, these settler concerns about the individual, and actually were responsive to place and country, and that there's so much more going on than what is affecting us as individuals. So yeah, I guess using, this sounds such like a cliche, particularly on a panel like this, but using writing to connect to home is really important to me. And yeah, I also just want to say before I get too distracted, thank you both, Ev and Maya, so much for your pieces. I felt like there were these really like really complimentary pieces, and so like powerful, and I just feel really honored to get to like be in this space with you both. Yeah, so thanks.
Really nice. I feel the same. Yeah.
I'm just going to turn my light on before it gets too dark in here and I just disappear into blackness. So.
Maya, how have you found the last couple of years? And I know you mentioned that you're near the Maribyrnong. Like, do you think that is a place that, you know, has given you some kind of energy or something the last couple of years?
Yeah, I guess like everyone can relate. The last couple of years were such a blur. I don't really know what's happened. And I think, you know, that's just my brain sort of like getting through it. But I guess the last couple of years I've just been walking along the Maribyrnong. I think I'm very fortunate that I've always been someone who's lived on river systems. So, you know, grew up on Latchi-Latchi country up in Mildura. And every day and every weekend was spent, you know, fishing with aunties and uncles and walking along the river with my mom, or, you know, getting a coffee and just sitting by, you know, the water and listening. I think that has, you know, I've really sort of latched onto that. It's just, and the birds too, Jazz, when you're talking about looking outside your window and looking at the birds, I do that constantly. I'm in love with birds. Obsessed. I think one day I'm going to become a bird watcher or something. But yeah, I think just noticing things around me changing as well, with the people, how, you know, no one was around doing, you know, as much construction, so there wasn't maybe a lot of vibrations, or the waterways seemed a lot clearer for a while there. I saw starfish in the Maribyrnong, and at one point I think there were seals in the Merri Creek, and I think noticing these things around me have really helped to me to connect to this country and to make myself, yeah, I guess a way of self-soothing and healing. I think that's really helped to be near rivers for sure.
Yeah. I think so too. I was born on Wiradjuri country and on the Murray, so I definitely relate. It's such a special place, and I always feel so lucky that I had a childhood there, you know, and you know, that isn't my country, but and nor is where I live now, in Wurundjeri country, but all these places that become home and that you find a really special connection to. I think, yeah, there's so much to be said in that about how welcoming and how, you know, when you tread lightly, the reciprocal relationship that we have with land wherever we travel and wherever we walk. And, Ef, did you have something you wanted to say to that?
Yeah, I mean, echoing everything that Jazz and Maya and you yourself, Bridget, said about, you know, finding ways of connecting to place, whether that be, you know, through spoken, written word, or whether that actually just be through the ways that we access country, regardless of what has been imposed upon it. I think my experience over the last sort of 18 months, particularly with, you know, moving away from home, moving interstate, and then going straight into a lockdown, you know, your identity is affirmed and continued by the people that you surround yourself with. And it's been, I think, very challenging to be away from my family, who I just adore, and I'm so lucky to have them. But it has been very challenging to be so far from them. And, you know, a phone call or a Zoom doesn't really achieve the same result. So I think we're all learning different ways of coping, and we're all learning different ways of making meaning and connection with whatever resources and tools that we have available. And I think that's just testament to an enduring resilience and spirit that mob have, that we have to have. And that's the same spirit that I know will strengthen us as we grapple with a very rapidly changing world, and one that is not changing for the better in terms of environment. We've seen, you know, many, many reports from the IPCC to tell us this already, so it's nothing that we don't already know. But the way that we globally mobilized around the pandemic, with an emphasis on health and trying to protect our most vulnerable community members, which was not done perfectly, and there are many things that I would wish were done much better, and the battle for that still isn't over. But if we can take that energy and that willingness and those resources and direct them towards, you know, direct them towards restoring country to, as Maya said, you know, all of this is about land back, because if land gets back to the custodians and the people who know how to care for it, that's how we have hope, you know. And we never want to treat globally, we don't want to treat Indigenous peoples like we're supposed to be the ones to resolve all of the problems that we didn't create, because that's ridiculously, ridiculously unfair, but we have to be a part of the solutions. You know, and that's one of the, I spend so much time thinking about the very specific kind of shift, grammatical shift of the title of this event, thinking about the Melbourne Writers Festival theme, you know, tell me how it ends. But this one is tell us how it ends. And I kept on imagining that with that kind of sarcastic voice that you sometimes do, Bridget, and that sort of challenge. It's like, nah, you tell us how it ends. You tell us. Like, I just couldn't get that out of my head. And I thought there must have been play in your mind with that twist.
That's really funny. I actually had it that wasn't on purpose at all, but I think that's so funny that you can imagine me saying it. And yeah, and as like Maya said, like, you know, you need us, like, you and we are needed. And I just wanted to say, I think your dad is joining us too. Ev is in attendance, so I just wanted to shout out, because you were mentioning, you know, family and missing home, and I think it's really important to acknowledge the people that are joining us on these journeys along the way. We've got 15 minutes to go. I'm happy if people want to pop some questions in the chat, and I can, or in the Q&A function, and I can have a look over and ask our panel while we've got some time. But I guess just briefly, I wanted to selfishly know what everyone is up to at the moment, whether or not there has been an effect on your craft from the last year or so, what we can kind of expect to see coming. Or, I mean, Jazz, like, you've just released a book, so I feel like a new one should be really on your mind, like maybe January, February, I'm hoping. I think that's fair enough. Ev, it's been like a long time since you released Drop Bear.
Yeah, a couple months at least.
Probably time to get onto that. Yeah, so I just wanted to hear what everyone's up to. Jazz, anything? Are you writing while you're away at the moment? Is that happening organically? Is that the reason for the trip?
I'm hoping that I will actually write. I feel like since I became a writer, I no longer have any time to write. So being away from life a little bit, I'm hoping we'll focus things. But I'm a student as well. I'm doing a master's for some reason. I'm lucky to do it, but it's just this funny thing that chips away. So, continuing to write, like continuing to my day job is like being a filmmaker. So I'm trying to bring together increasingly like how film and writing can sort of sit together. And I think that's a really beautiful thing to have the privilege to get to think about. And getting to work with other deadly folk. Maya and I have a little project that we're kicking off next week together, which is like a little mob writing space and responding to artworks and thinking about, you know, ekphrastic stuff, looking at some beautiful works that are showing in Melbourne by Petrina from Molka Projects. Ev, I've got you on the homework list, so that I'm really excited, actually. This is going to give away some of my homework, but I'm really excited to give the people in the class like an opportunity to read all these different pieces that respond to artworks and then show them what the artwork is and see if people can like figure that out. because I realized this recently that Ev, you and I had both written poems that respond to a work by Jonathan Jones. And I was reading, reading the notes in Drop Bear, and I was like, holy shit, the fact that two people can look at this same beautiful, powerful piece of work and respond in these just like radically different ways. I don't know. It's just so exciting. It's so nice that the world's opening up again and just getting to connect with folk and sort of have these spaces for connection and collaboration. I'm feeling so lucky. I think, Mel, what you said a moment ago about forgetting that, like, what's happened, like, it's really hard to know. I feel like all of a sudden, like, the last 18 months just feels like they're contracting into nothingness, and it's really delightful to look forward. But also I need to, like, remind myself that there's still so much chaos that's been wrought by COVID and by the inequity of that, and, like, trying to keep that in mind as well and not just move on to the, you know, loveliness of hopefully what comes after it. Anyway, that was a big response. I'll throw to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love that, you know, this the idea of like collaboration and it being like, I think just again, like something that we've really missed. And like, you know, you're kicking off this new project. I know that I'm doing something with Maya in the new year. And I think it's just really telling of like how, you know, we have these relationships and they're really important, and we lean on each other, and that's where the magic happens when we collaborate and do things like this. So I'm really excited. That got me really, I'm excited to see what happens. Ev, what's happening with you? Overland?
Yeah, just usually as overcommitted as usual, which means I don't get to do a lot of the things that I really want to do at the moment. I would love to be a little bit more on the ground with trying to, trying to collate some of the amazing opportunities and programs. And so stuff like hearing that, like Jazz and Maya, that kind of program. I want somebody to pay me to just like take note of everything that's going on and get everyone involved in all of these amazing projects and actually have time to go encourage them to go do that. But alas, that's not a job yet. At the moment I'm working on a novel, and it's kind of like a fictional but also academic practice about looking at the histories of the way in which women and people of colour, and especially women of colour, have been treated in the history of Australian literature. So some of those things I touched on in Drop Bear, but really just starting to think about what is that actual human cost and who did we never get to hear from. So I'm working with a couple of different people about recording some testimonies and having some events to really celebrate and try to centre some of those stories, because it's that oral memory. That gets lost so easily, particularly in a pandemic. We just lose stories that are so important to us. So I'm really interested in finding ways of creatively approaching those, as well as just getting them down on a tape recorder. So that's me next year. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. And, you just won that prize. So I'm hoping a
Yeah, that's funding that. Good timing.
Great. I mean, I'd be happy to have a lunch shouted at some time.
If oh, don't worry. We're all getting a lunch. What are you working on, Bridge? Before you,
me?
You're going to move on from us, but you got to tell us what you're working on. A million things at once, raising bubs and that.
Yeah. All of that, amongst everything. But I started working back in July at the ABC, so that's taken up a lot of my time, which has been really great, really challenging, really stimulating, stepping away from weirdly creative editorial into policy editorial is just such a funny shift, and just so many different little nuances and idiosyncrasies that it's just so much overlap as well that I wouldn't expect, and I'm really loving that. I'm also doing a master's, Jazz, so I also don't know why.
Just casually doing a master's.
But yeah, that's me. I'm hoping next year things will kind of, I'll find this rhythm again where I'll be able to do, dip my hand back into kind of the creative side of things as well. And this project with Maya that I'm doing, and this mob who, big shout out to them and their Black Waddle that they released over pandemic times. I'm excited for what's going to happen next year. Maya, did you want to have anything to, do you have anything to add before I jump into some questions?
I guess I'm the same with you, Evelyn. I probably overcommit so much that I have too many things I'm doing. But I guess I could say that I got some news yesterday that I am a runner-up for the SBS Emerging Writers competition.
Wow, so, congratulations.
Thank you.
deserved. So I was
pretty chuffed. Yeah. Thank you. So that just made my day that I actually in shock, swore on the phone to the lady on the SBS team. But I was just really chuffed that the judges enjoyed my work, and I think that reaffirms that I'm probably on the right track in terms of writing. And just being here tonight with you guys, Jazz and Evelyn, you guys are my writing heroes. So I was just blown away when I was asked to be a part of this. So thank you.
Sweet. I think it's really beautiful that we've shared these poems that are steeped in kind of anger and some negativity in any way, but just these kind of really deep emotions. But then at the same time, there's so much celebration, Evelyn winning the prize tonight, Maya, you being this SBS runner-up. I think this is just, it's really beautiful to witness. And again, thank you, Ruth. So I'm going to just throw to a couple of questions in the last 5 minutes. The first one being, how could mainstream Australia be motivated to take action to care more for country and First Nation people's rights? Would you consider speaking up? Forums, maybe reading a poem, talking about environmental concerns. Do you think this could be helpful for raising awareness? Any other ideas? But I guess the power of poetry, and whether or not that, is something that has the power to change or enact change in any way.
I want to hear Ev's answer. That's all I was going to say. I was
Sabine, thank you for asking that question. I think it's a valuable one to consider. And I think that the immediate and the short answer is yes, there is a place for poetry in this kind of environment. I'm not speaking about myself specifically, what I wouldn't speak for, but I believe that every industry, every practice, every form of art that we can make should be turned towards, as much as possible, should be directed towards justice. I believe that we are harmed and colonized through language, that in addition to the ways in which we are harmed and colonized through invasion and dispossession and displacement. We have to find linguistic forms of resistance, and anything that works to upset that and works to claim space and to reclaim space from colonizing structures is really very important. But I often think that we run the risk of overemphasizing the role of the artist, the role of the creator in these kinds of conversations. I believe that poetry should do stuff, and poetry should be turned towards justice, towards ethical action, towards liberation. But I don't believe that poets alone are ever going to affect that kind of change, which is why we have to work as actively as possible in solidarity. So is my work, speaking for myself, is my work as valuable as if I were out there on the front lines, chaining myself to bulldozers, leading campaigns around ending fossil fuels? You know what? Probably not. Probably not. And if I were the kind of person who was made for that kind of activity, I would be doing that, but I'm not. We all have our abilities. We all have our roles. And if we can work collectively in strength and in unity and recognize that some of us have more action to do at some moments and that some of us should be out there supporting them, I think we can actually really, we really can affect that kind of change. So yeah, I don't know. How do you mob feel?
You go, Jess. I was just going to shout out because you just reminded me that, you know, while you are out there bulldozing, chaining yourself to bulldozers and things like that, that you could be. But, you know, we've just had COP26 in Glasgow, and there are young Indigenous women who are out there, like, screaming at Leonardo DiCaprio.
There are poets as well who are at COP26. Yeah. Kathy Jetnell Kitchener is out there, and she is speaking for the Marshall Islands, and she's speaking for her homelands. And we should be celebrating activists who use every aspect of their craft, whether that be, you know, their poetic voice or whether that be their fist, you know, celebrate them and lift them up as much as possible, I think.
For sure. Yeah. Sorry, Jazz, to cut you off.
No, not at all. I was going to say that also poets and artists have been a part of protesting the colonial intervention on this place since day one. And we have a legacy of an egalitarian poetic tradition, right? Like, we have oral histories, but we also have a history of people who can jump up in front of a crowd and use story and voice to mobilize people. And I think I don't think there's a lack of people doing it. I think there's I think there is an incredibly long tradition that I see, like Maya and Evelyn and so many writers working into, and it's not it's not for lack of First Nations people speaking about these issues that we're in this situation. I hate the idea, Evelyn, of you not writing. I think that's incredibly important. But I think that we need to exist at every tier in our society, right? We have people who are chaining themselves to the bulldozers, and we need more. But we need people at every level who are hitting people at every point. And if that is, like, you know, turning on the radio in the morning and hearing a poet or an activist speaking about the importance of these issues, that's incredibly powerful, as well as these activists who aren't getting the fucking recognition that they need, because we live in this horrific media landscape that means we need people everywhere all the time to try and get focus on these issues.
Yeah. Maya, did you have something you wanted to say before we wrap up?
I think that Evelyn and Jazz, you both just basically summed up everything that was going through my head anyway. But I would, yeah, I guess emphasize that poetry and art does have a place, and it always has been within activism. And if we can use our writing as a way to highlight the work that these amazing activists are doing who are going out there and going on country and chaining themselves to trees and things like that. I think, yeah, we all have a part to play. And I definitely do think poetry has a place, but of course it isn't going to solve everything. But if we can help each other in the way that we know how, then that definitely has a place.
What a beautiful way to end the session, I think. Thank you all so much, and my eternal gratitude to you three beautiful women who I'm lucky to know and work with and listen to speak. I'm very grateful, but we will have to leave it there. And thanks to our interpreters and Melbourne Writers Fest. I'm really sad that this festival is now coming to an end, and I'm so grateful again for being one of the First Nations curators this year and selfishly curating my top three favourite events that I would love to see. Yeah, so thank you all so much. Much love, and we will see you soon.
Thanks for listening. To support Melbourne Writers Festival, you can make a donation of any size at mwf.com.au.